This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome on in to a Monday edition of Sports Talk. It is February 24th, getting closer to Fat Tuesday next week. Get a Lundi Gras coming up a week from today. We got the Matt McMahon show coming up 7 p.m. this evening, recapping LSU's weekend. Was another tough one for the Tigers. The Pelicans, at least, were a positive last night, coming back for a victory against the San Antonio Spurs. Went into halftime down, was it double digits or 9 points?
Yeah, it was double digits, and then they just blew up in the second half. And the Spurs, man, that was a tanking team, Steve. That's what they looked like in the second half.
Yeah, I don't know if they were trying to miss shots or they were just, it was just an abysmal night for them from the field.
Joel kept saying ice cold, and I think that might even be being nice. Like, they were awful in the second half. And so the Pelicans took advantage, give them credit. They outscored them 67-32 from like the 9:44 mark in the third quarter on. So they just annihilated the Spurs past that halfway point.
Yeah, Pels finished with a 114-96 victory over the San Antonio Spurs. They'll see him again. Same bat time, same bat place tomorrow in the Smoothie King Center. We saw Zion Williamson putting up a 22-point performance night. Still under that 30-minute mark, though, Charlie. 28 minutes of play. But, man, oh, man, he's being a heck of a producer when he is on the court. And it was nice to see some of the length in the Pels lineup, getting some rebounds way cleaning the glass better than the Spurs did last night.
Yeah, for the first time, it felt like the Pelicans viciously out-rebounded a team, which was great. It was great to see. Kelly Olynyk grabbed like 15 boards. Even Misi had a career high in 15 boards. Carlo Mackovich was out there grabbing rebounds. He had a big night, too.
Yeah, career high 19 points.
You know, no Victor Wembanyama. They took advantage of the Spurs front court without, you know, their star young piece. And you mentioned Zion. So NBA has been kind of covering this. Zion Williamson now weighs in at 264 pounds, the lightest he has weighed since being drafted in 2019, per Mike Wright, who covers the NBA for ESPN. So, good for Zion. He's played himself into shape. He looks great. They're still being careful with him. I wouldn't expect him to play the back-to-back that they have coming up very soon against Phoenix,
right,
when they play him on Thursday and Friday. But with the way Phoenix is playing right now, they might not need him for one of those games.
At least he'll be in action tomorrow night. That's the plan, at least, to take on the Spurs again. Head coach Willie Green spoke at practice today. Let's hear a little bit of what Coach Green had to say to the media. Oh, sorry. I jumped the gun on you, Charlie. We're going to get the audio of Coach Willie Green speaking at Pels practice today as they get ready for the Spurs tomorrow. And then the Pellies going on a 4-game Mardi Gras road trip. You're going to have the Phoenix Suns twice, the Utah Jazz, and then it's the L.A. Lakers. We got that Coach Green audio now, so let's hear from him at Pels practice today.
We saw last night where, you know, Trey in the fourth quarter finally got a couple of shots to go. He was kind of like, you know, laughing about it. But how much throughout the years have you seen him kind of improve with just not allowing his whether it makes or misses to dictate, you know, how he's playing?
Yeah, that's growth for Trey, is having a next play speed, understanding that teams are, they're going to guard you. They're going to try to close out to the three-point line, make you put the ball on the floor, continue to play through it, make the right plays. His shots will go down. His teammates will find him. I thought that was, even though he didn't have the offensive game that he wanted to have last night against the Spurs, I thought it was a huge step in the right direction.
And just overall, where have you seen Jose kind of improve the most as his role has grown throughout the season?
Jose takes advantage of the opportunity in front of him. We just talked about it. He's playing fast. Defensively, he's picking up full court. He's causing havoc, getting steals and deflections. He's walking on the floor, trying to get his teammates involved. And when he has open opportunities to score, he does it. I thought he played a big role in us in that third and fourth quarter, making a comeback and then pushing forward from there.
Willie, over the last month, Zion's numbers per 36 minutes are incredibly similar to Shea, right? He's an MVP candidate. We see what he's doing on the court, but can you describe, like, what else has improved, where he's taken steps forward, like maybe in terms of leadership, especially since some guys have got down?
Yeah, I mean, he's more vocal in the locker room. He's more vocal with his teammates. Him and Daniel Bove are putting in a ton of work behind the scenes. But, you know, talking to him the last couple of days, he really wants to take a step defensively in the right direction. And you can see that on the floor. He's really mindful about, you know, switching screens, guarding the ball, finishing possessions. And I think that's another step in the right direction for Z.
And are we going to see a lot more of him guarding point guards, a lot of the quicker guys on the perimeter since you're going to bigger lineups?
Yeah, I think we're going to see him guard, you know, a number of different guys in a number of different positions. And he's more than capable. And so we'll try to put our guys in the best position to be successful. But, you know, normally we're switching screens so you can be on any of these guys. It's really about, you know, knowing our principles, sitting down, guarding, and then our help defense should be ready behind, you know, behind those guys.
What can a game like last night do for a guy like Carlo?
It builds confidence. It builds confidence. It builds momentum. We want to continue to attack every game, even with our young guys playing. We want them playing at a high level. Last night was evident with Carlo, Eve, Jordan Hawkins stepping on the floor, all three of those guys being huge contributors to our win. And now let's see if we can do it again. And that's the consistency part of it that we want to see is, you do it one game, can we be greedy and come back and do it again?
Kelby had minimal practice time before he played his first game. You guys are plus 32 in the two games that he's played. What do you think about just how he's been able to quickly adjust?
Yeah, he's a huge bonus for our group. High IQ. He's big, 7 feet, can stretch the floor, can play with the ball in his hands. You know, really good passer. And so his feel for the game is really helping our group. We want to continue to explore those options.
Well, is it any easier to kind of carry momentum from this last one when you play the same team in a span of 48 hours?
It can be. And that's the goal for us is, you know, to look forward to getting on the floor and attacking again. They're going to make some adjustments. So we have to be prepared to step on the floor, play our game, and then make adjustments as well. And so it's going to come down to, you know, sticking with our principles, executing on both ends of the floor.
Their main perimeter guys really struggled shooting-wise. How much of it, when you look at the tape, is that you were happy with some of the stuff that you guys did defensively? You feel like that was a big factor?
It is. I think we can get stops, but the finishing possessions are huge for us. You know, close to 70 rebounds. 52 defensive rebounds is evident that we're getting stops, we're contesting shots. Now we're giving ourselves an opportunity to go down and score on them. So much of the same, the next game is what we have to focus on, getting on the floor and executing in those concepts.
And when you get 69 rebounds, I think that's the most this team's had in last five years. Is that like further proof that you should stay big and maybe all this talk of small ball that we've peppered you with last few years, maybe going bigger is probably maybe the right way?
You know, there's times where we need to be bigger on the floor. There's times where, you know, you can be sort of a smaller unit. The goal for us is, though, no matter who steps on the floor, it's bringing a level of toughness and aggressiveness that allows us to play our style of basketball. And there's times that we've been small this season, but we haven't been physical. And so we want to move forward in those directions and make sure we're implementing those concepts.
There are a few numbers floating around now about, you know, how Zion's getting double teamed way more than just about everybody else in the league. You've seen a lot of great players. How unique is his ability to still get it done with 2-3 guys coming at him every night?
It's incredible. What he's able to do on the floor, even in the limited minutes that he's playing, it's incredible. It's a credit to the work that he's put in to put himself in this position. He's extremely talented. We all know that, but he's also has an extremely high IQ when he's on the floor. So he can attack, get to the basket, and he's also finding his teammates for open looks.
Pelicans head coach Willie Green there, and you heard him talking about the Pel's rebounding advantage last game, and they just waxed the Spurs on the board. It was 69 rebounds to 46. Pretty impressive. But like you mentioned, Charlie, there was no Victor Wembanyama in the mix. So they were without their big man there. But this Pel's team has just struggled with rebounding all season long. So maybe they can go more with that big lineup more often, if that they're going to get more of those rebounds on the night.
I want to say they started doing it against the Denver Nuggets a couple weeks back, where they started Carlo next to Eve, and it's like the two young guys, and now they have Kelly Olynyk thrown into that mix, who started just this past night against the Spurs. And so Olynyk was really impressive, Steve. I mean, give the guy credit. I wasn't expecting much from him in that trade return for Brandon Ingram.
Boom, double-double last night.
He's been significantly better than Bruce Brown's been early on in a Pelicans uniform. And so Olynyk, he's going to be under contract for next year as well. I think this is kind of his early, you know, showcase of his ability to the Pelicans, that he deserves to be here next year and beyond. And so Kelly Olynyk, off to a great start in his Pelicans career. I think Will Guillory had a great tweet that when he recorded his 14th rebound last night, it was the first time he had that many rebounds since like 2021.
Wow.
And then he finished with 15.
Right.
So great performance by him. Carlo Mackovic, the one shot that he missed, Steve, was like a corner three. But outside of that, 8 of 9. From the floor, and he had a career high in points. He had a great performance last night. It feels like the Pelicans have these young bigs that are really starting to step up, and if they have a more defined role for the future, I think Eve Missy obviously has his defined role as the future five of this team, but we'll see what happens with Carlo, and we'll see how they decide to use, you know, Kelly Olynyk. And certain, I think when they added Kelly Olynyk with that trade, they had a vision of him fitting next to Zion. And Will made a great point about this when he was on with us at like 4:25, that you know, the fit with Zion next to a spacing five. You know, Kelly Olynyk's not, you know, your typical ground and pound five necessarily.
Right.
He's more of kind of a high IQ is what we keep hearing from the guy, but you watch him on the floor and it makes all the sense in the world. He's a good fit next to Zion Williamson. So they're kind of getting an early gauge of what he could look like on the court in those types of situations with Zion, but then also those other bigs that you have in the youth movement, right, with Eve and Carlo, and seeing what you have from them for basically the rest of the season.
Yeah, the best case scenario in all this, at least you're getting some of your young talent some extended minutes and a run during this lost season pretty much for the Pelicans this year. And just got to hope everybody like Herb and DeJounte Murray come back healthy next year and we get to see what this roster is truly capable of.
Update from Alec Box Stadium here, Steve. LSU baseball versus Nicholls State. Very intriguing first inning. You know, I've been kind of watching it as we were listening to Willie there. Nicholls jumped on William Schmidt in the first inning. William Schmidt, the highly touted freshman arm that everyone loves to, you know, just ooze about his talent, and he's got the greatest arm talent since, I think, what was it that Ben McDonald said, or that Scott Sanders said, was like since Aaron Nola, and he's got the Ben McDonald comp as well. So he's a fantastic young pitcher. He gets his first start in a Tiger uniform tonight in the midweek against Nicholls, and he starts getting a little bit shaky early on. He gives up two singles back-to-back, first two runners reach, and then an error allows a third runner to reach. I think that might
first
be the
error of the season, right,
for LSU. So the bases are loaded with one out for young William Schmidt. Mound visit. Gets a sack fly, and then a fielder's choice. So he gets out of it with only one run allowed. So good on you, William Schmidt. I imagine it was Nate Yeske that made that mound visit.
Right.
Got him to calm down a little bit, made some good pitches, got out of it, only allowed one run. Now, the bottom half of the first is also intriguing because, you know, first batter flies out, Derek Curiel strikes out, but then Jared Jones earns a four-pitch walk. A hit-by-pitch for Josh Pearson puts two on. And then Daniel Dickinson, who's been an RBI machine early on for the Tigers, gets a two-out base hit. And now another walk for Ashton Larson has loaded the bases. So it's a 1-1 game in the bottom of the first with two outs.
We'll be keeping an eye on the Tigers taking on Nicholls tonight, give you some more updates throughout the show. We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be talking about a little bit of the NFL Combine preview with Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports. So stay right tuned here on WWL. We'll be back after the break. Welcome on back into Sports Talk. Steve Geller and Charlie Long hanging out with you until 7 o'clock. That's when the Matt McMahon show will take over. Talking a little NFL Combine right now, though, and to help us break it all down, Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports, joining us. Joe, how the heck you doing this Monday?
I'm doing great. I'm extremely excited that I'm going to be in Indianapolis later on this week. Can't wait to see these guys test and who's going to possibly rise their stock. Couldn't be more juiced up.
Yeah, looking at, we got some word today of some guys that won't be taking part in any of the drills. I don't think there was any surprise in most of the names you've been hearing about. But curious, Ashton Jeanty, the running back, some of the folks have him in play at number 9 for the Saints with that pick, and it just seems like there's so many other needs for this black and gold squad that using it on a running back, I don't want to say it seems like not a waste, but there are just so many other aspects that they can address, and they've got a guy like Alvin Kamara already on the roster. Do you think Jeanty is worth a 9th overall selection?
I think Jeanty's worth a top 10 pick, but not for the Saints, for what you just talked about. It doesn't make a lot of sense for this team right now that needs to get better and needs to address a best overall player on the board type of approach. And when you're going in that direction, you need to find elite defensive players, defensive tackles, corners, safeties, offensive linemen to continue to shore up your offensive line where they've invested multiple first-round picks over the past few drafts. Taking someone like Ashton Jeanty is a luxury pick. Having a running back, a weapon like Jeanty, is for a team that is a big playmaker away from either getting to the playoffs or a playoff team that is really close to contending for a Super Bowl. We saw that, the best example of how Saquon Barkley is just being wasted away with the New York Giants, and then you put him on the Eagles, and that's how the Eagles win a Super Bowl. So right now, no, it doesn't make sense for the Saints to go in that direction. I would much rather see them maybe grab a guard sitting at that 9th spot if it's Tyler Booker, or if they're going on the defensive side and someone like Will Johnson is still on the board, one of these edge rushers like Mykel Williams or Shamar Stewart or James Pierce Jr. still on the board. Those positions are far more valuable for the Saints team turning things around and going in the right direction rather than taking a running back.
Joe, you seem to be really high on the cornerback group this year. And I think, you know, just looking at your big board, I'll kind of break down some of these prospects with you and pick your brain on them. It feels like the corner class this year has a lot of question marks, and not because of play on the field, but more because of injury issues and concerns there. You have Will Johnson at number 4 on your top 25 big board, the corner from Michigan. He obviously had the issues that limited him this past season. Savon Revell at number 7 from ECU, I'm very intrigued by, and I would love to get your thoughts on him. Just a freak athlete, complete freak show, but someone that suffered a torn ACL early this past season. Granted, you know, we'll see what the timeline is for that and his recovery, but, you know, someone that's very intriguing early on in the process. Also, Zaire Thomas at number 10 from Florida State. A lot of corners here, and then also Benjamin Morrison going back to the injury issues, the hip injury that he has, and kind of seeing what that does with him with the combines, with medicals and everything like that. So just want to get your thoughts on these top corners and, you know, some of the guys that have injury issues ahead of this draft.
Yeah, the one thing that I think is always missed with fans and tuning into and tapping into like draft coverage and not understanding why certain guys on a general analyst board is going to be different from how the NFL is going to draft them and how the first round could end up turning out. And it's exactly what you just brought up. I'm allowed to take the risk of projecting a guy's tape that got hurt without really truly factoring in the injury stuff. And an NFL team has to be really careful about that. They have to be really careful about how they approach it. I think all these corners, though, none of these guys are in a position, unless something comes out this week from the medical reporting, none of these guys have any concerns of long-term health issues like degenerative knee issues or anything like that. It's brutal that Revell suffered the ACL that he did. But he still is, as you mentioned, a freak athlete. He is ridiculously fluid for somebody who's 6'3". He is exactly what the NFL covets in corner prospects. And if he didn't get hurt, he probably would have been a top 10 pick in this class. But because he doesn't get to do any of this testing, he's going to get probably pushed to the wayside, and he might end up being a second-round pick if the NFL is worried enough. Will Johnson was a little banged up this year, but I don't think for me it's anything that's so serious that it's going to that hurt him as a player. What made him so great was not only his length, but it was his decision-making. It was his ability to attack the football in the air and to be aggressive and to know what was happening before it did. That is a rare instinct that he played with. But of all these guys that you just brought up, if I was concerned about the health, the future health for a prospect, it would be Benjamin Morrison, because he's dealing with, he dealt with a hip injury, dealt with a shoulder injury. He is a very light and thin corner prospect. And any time that we have these guys that are thinner prospects and they start getting banged up, it makes you wonder, do they have enough weight? Are they big enough to withstand the hits that a long NFL season is going to do to a player's body? So if there is one player amongst the group that I really like and I'm really high on that ends up maybe getting held back by injuries, it would probably be Morrison.
When you look at this week coming up in Indianapolis with the drills going on and the teams, you know, scouting stuff for the NFL draft, are there any players you think are going to really thrive in this situation and really jump out with their numbers to start skyrocketing up other teams' draft boards?
Yeah, there's two guys that I think are going to drive a lot of the conversations this week. One is well-known, and I think that the other for the casual NFL fan is not going to be super caught up on. Kenneth Grant from Michigan is a name that has been pushed a lot as a possible top 15 pick. At 340 pounds, he is going to probably run one of the faster times for his physical profile. He's going to test really, really well. And I hope he does test and realizes that this is a huge opportunity for everybody to be freaking out more than what people were doing last year for Tavondre Sweat. I think people are going to be seeing this big dude move and realize that he is a special, special player. The other that I think isn't well known but is known to SEC fans, Nick Emmanuari from South Carolina. He's 6'3", he's 220 pounds, he's built like a linebacker. He flies all over the field like a 5'9" free safety. He's so fluid, and I think that his testing this week is going to be off the charts. His jumps are going to be great. If he runs faster than a 4.5, which would be ridiculous at his size profile, he should be discussed as a possible top 15 guy in this class. But I don't think I see a lot of people and just fans in general talking much about him. He will be one of those prospects that if we're putting at the top of our board as, hey, this guy made the most money, it's probably going to be Nick Emmanuari.
Sneaking into the back end of your top 25 here, Joe, I want to get your thoughts on, you know, Marion Hampton and also the running back class in general. I'm going to be intrigued to see how, obviously, Ashton Gentry is going to be a first-round pick come April, but, you know, how many running backs actually go in the first round, because it's got so much depth in this class that maybe a lot of these guys will fall into day two, and then you'll really see the run on them from, you know, the second round into the third round, where you might see, like, 10 guys selected because it's so deep. You know, past Omari and Hampton, when you have guys like Cam Scataboo and Dylan Sampson and Caleb Johnson and all these other studs, the two Ohio State boys as well. Just want to get your thoughts on Omari and Hampton and then this running back class in general.
Yeah, I think that for what you just described is how this is going to end up panning out. Maybe a second running back like Hampton sneaks into the end of the first round, but more realistically, we're going to probably see a lot of teams being patient, that they've got maybe a guy they feel is specifically perfect for their rushing style and their offensive scheme, but they're just going to wait until day two because they don't want to miss out on these other positions that have a lot more scarcity. Offensive line is a very scarce group this year. There is not a lot of good options on day three. There are a million good options at running back on day three. You could get a starting caliber running back possibly in the fourth round if things bounce your way. I think that with this running back group, that run that will end up happening, like we see a lot of times with deep position groups, will come somewhere in the second round. And especially with a position that is increasing in its value recently in the NFL, is always generally going to get pushed further down on the pecking order of positions to be addressed in any draft class. But Omarion Hampton, for me, is that second guy who leads the discussion early because he is just a tank of a runner. He is a great athlete for his profile, for how big he is and just how thick he is. He's not afraid of contact. He's willing to hit guys. He's a pretty good pass protector. He's going to run hard between the tackles. He's got the burst to separate. Hampton has the goods of being a 1,200-yard rusher consistently in the NFL if he ends up in the right offense that gives him the rock as often as he can get.
Talking to Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports. Taking a look at your top 25 board and noticing, I don't think you're a fan of the offensive tackles in this year's class. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not very juiced up about these offensive linemen. I think that we've got a lot of guys in this class that either are all tools and not enough technique, or all technique and not enough tools. And
okay,
my top 25, it's been pointed out by a lot of LSU fans, because my co-host Tom Rufino and Joe's a big LSU guy, so he started ragging me on Twitter. Will Campbell was just on the outside of my top 25. And my reasoning is just his floor is phenomenal, and he's my 26th ranked prospect. But I just would like to put a little bit more stock in some of these guys like Kelvin Banks or Josh Simmons that are better athletes that I think have a little bit of a higher ceiling. I think Will Campbell goes on to have a really long, amazing career because he's just so steady. But if I were to throw a dart and say Kelvin Banks or Josh Simmons has a slightly better and a more impactful career, I would bet on that because they have the traits that Will Campbell just doesn't have, sadly.
Yeah, it's interesting because I see a lot of mocks that have him going four to the Patriots. I don't really see it, Joe. I think that the Patriots are going to get one of those top three blue chip prospects with the fourth overall pick because it, you know, a lot of people do have it. And I know that you have Malachi Starks in that conversation as well, but Abdul Carter, Travis Hunter, and Mason Graham are, you know, the kind of the consensus top three players in this draft. And I think that with Tennessee or maybe even Cleveland or even New York selecting a quarterback with a top three pick, it feels like the better pick for the Patriots at pick four would be to take one of those guys.
Yeah, I think that you bring up a really good talking point here with Will Campbell, that he's going to go on to be a great player, but bringing him into the discussion as the fourth overall pick, I'm just not there because you're passing up on these guys that could be all pros and huge, huge difference makers. In order to get somebody who's just a quality, reliable starter. That's where you get guys in the back end of the first round. You're not making that pick. You're not making a pick like that in the top four. Tedderell McMillan's like another guy that I always think of in that same conversation that has actually been mocked to the Patriots at fourth overall a ton. And I see a really good second receiver in an offense that needs the attention to go towards a primary guy in order for him to succeed. But if I'm drafting a guy with that type of a profile that is reliant on winning in contested situations, I'm not doing it in the top 10. I'm doing it somewhere in the middle to the back end of the first round.
Joe, I'm curious. I've seen some of the mocks out there coming out. A few have had Penn State tight end Tyler Warren landing with the Saints at that ninth overall selection. How do you like that?
I think that would be a nice, really strong fit, especially, you know, kind of in the past seeing with Taysom Hill did, you could get some of that same usage out of Tyler Warren. I think the bigger question is, what is the direction at quarterback for the Saints going forward? Like, is there a faith put into Derek Carr? Do they try and go and acquire somebody else? Do they try to draft one of the guys in this class somewhere on day two? Tyler Warren, to me, is another guy that might end up being a little bit of a luxury pick drafting a tight end when you've got other needs that need to be addressed. But if you don't want to miss out on a player who's a great athlete for a 6'5", 260-pound tight end, who can stretch the field, who can win after the catch, you're going to get a really good player out of Tyler Warren. I just wonder if it's better off that he's on a team that already has a quarterback situation figured out.
Gotcha. Thanks so much for the time, Joe. When are you heading up to Indy?
Oh, I'm getting there on Thursday. Couldn't be more excited.
Awesome, man.
Appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Joe DeLeon, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports. Have a good one, Joe.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. You can chime in to 504-260-1870 on our Oakland Hard Jewelers talk and text line. We shall take a break. Be right back with more after this on WWL. Well, that shaky first inning sure woke the Tigers up. LSU baseball now leading Nichols 5-1. We're in the bottom of the third.
Yeah, real quick, Steve. So Kader Mbide earns a walk with the bases loaded and two outs. It scores the second run. LSU takes a 2-1 lead. And then the rally, two-out rally continues with Steven Monster Milam hitting a two-run RBI single, and that was the end of the scoring for the first inning. So LSU took a 4-1 lead into the second, where Bear Jones hits a solo shot to make it 5-1. And as far as, you know, William Schmidt on the mound after that kind of shaky first inning, he's now through three innings with zero earned runs.
So just needed that little bit of tension to get settled a bit.
Yeah, no, he looks great right now. So we'll see if LSU can hold on to this early 5-1 lead.
We're going
to
check in on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line right now. We got James on the line. What you got today, James? Happy Monday.
Hey, likewise, bro. You guys mentioned Pelissero accusing Green Bay. I got John Sigler, Saints beat writer, accusing Atlanta of committing this crime. And it sounds like it sounds about right, because that's basically what they're saying in the article, is that they're fearing that Kellen Moore is going to take that push. What do you call it?
Tush push, whatever. Yeah. The brotherly shove, tush push, whatever you want.
Yeah, once we draft Tyler Warren, we'll use him for a tush push.
Take that to the Big Easy and win a title. But listen, I want five draft choices to start for us. That guy that other guy that you had on, I mean, he may know about other teams, but we need talent. So I'm with you. I'm with him when he says not a running back, only because we have nobody to play the 3-4 defense. We have no linebackers that are going to play the 3-4 defense right now. So we do need somebody coming off the edge. But as far as running back is concerned, I'm looking at the guy from Ohio State.
Which one?
From Baton Rouge.
There's two of them.
The guy from Baton Rouge that played ball at Tennessee. We need speed. When we were winning, when we had Reggie Bush, we had speed. We had speed. We had Majoka. We got nothing. So, yeah, give me five starters coming out this draft to justify Nicky's still hanging around.
Travion Henderson from Ohio State's the speed back, and then also Dylan Sampson from Tennessee, another speed back. James, to our point from what we were talking about with Joe just now, there's going to be that run in the second and third round on running backs you're going to see like 7 to 10 of them get selected in those two rounds alone. And that's if, you know, Marion Hampton doesn't sneak into the back end of the first round. I'm still kind of, you know, unsure about that. I think he'll probably be a day two pick, and then that will kind of start the run with like Scataboo and Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins and all these other studs at the running back position that will fly off the board. I'm with you. I want the Saints to draft a running back at some point. I'm not taking one at 9. I'm not taking Ashton Jeanty. So, and it's because it's such a deep class and you can get a stud in day two.
And I don't know if Jeanty's a generational type of guy.
I think he's fantastic.
I've heard some comps on LaDainian Tomlinson already. I'm like, whoa,
Mike's
pump the brakes.
Comp is what I see. I love Mike's comp for him. Jamal Charles.
Okay.
Is what he sees from Ashton.
That's
Jeanty.
A lot better than saying LaDainian Tomlinson to me.
Right. No, I mean, that's Hall of Famer. Anyway, so I'm with you, James. I'm all for selecting a running back at some point, but not on pick 9, day 2, 100%. Now, as far as the 3-4 defense goes, Mike said that he was, you know, if he was there in his mock, Jalen Walker could have been considered for the Saints at pick 9. And he's a 3-4 outside linebacker from Georgia. Now, will he play off ball at the NFL level? Will he play kind of the edge position? We'll kind of have to see. But he's a very fascinating prospect, great speed pass rusher, someone that, you know, when he was let off the chain at Georgia, was just a complete game wrecker. He's got him going to the Jaguars at pick 5 in his mock. I have him going a little bit later. But at the same time, you know, the way that Mike was talking about him, I could see him potentially being an option if you're looking edge rusher, you know, outside linebacker at pick 9.
Yeah, the same situation with, you know, Brandon Staley coming in a defensive coordinator brings a whole bunch of personnel questions, because this is a scheme that this is a huge change, which we haven't seen in New Orleans for a while.
You desperately need a nose tackle now, and I think you can address that in round 2, because that's another position that's really loaded in this class, is interior defensive line.
Right.
In my mock, I had Tyleik Williams going at 30 to the Bills, but if he's somehow there at pick 40 for the Saints in round 2, that would be an awesome fit as far as just a run-stuffing nose tackle.
Taking a break here on Sports Talk. You can check out Mike Dettillier's mock draft at WWL.com, plus a whole lot more on the black and gold. We're going to take a break, be back with more as we get ready for the Matt McMahon Show. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Closing down shop here on this Monday edition of Sports Talk, getting ready for the Matt McMahon Show coming up next right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Doing a quick check-in on the LSU baseball game against Nichols. The Tigers have a 5-1 lead over the Colonels, entering the bottom of the fourth innings. We got a home run from the Bear Jones hitting a solo shot on the night. We'll keep you updated throughout the program as we get ready for the Matt McMahon show now here on WWL. Tomorrow, we're going to be getting into even more of the combine. Zach Nagy of LSU Tigers on SI will also join us, and Ryan Roberts from A to Z Sports giving you all things NFL combine, plus a preview of number 2 LSU baseball's first big test of the season against number 18 Dallas Baptist with D1 baseball writer Aaron Fitt. See you later, folks. Have a good night.